I feel like we have these conversations, like today's episode, almost once a week where I come to you and I'm like, hey, Mary, I need a teacher's perspective. I have to have a meeting or I have to send an email. And I want to advocate for my kids in a productive way. And you've given me so much feedback over the years that I was like, we really need to share some of this, you know, as a parent and as an educator, and giving both sides of it, because I feel like our audience would really benefit from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so today we're talking about advocating for our kids in school. And obviously, Jess and I both come from the perspective of parents, but for different types of kids all around. All four of our kids are different. And then as someone who taught for 13 years, I have that extra little layer of what actually happens after the parent walks out of the room or in during the school day when the parents aren't around, like what's truly best for kids and what we're doing when you're not there. So this episode is just that conversation, the one that we've had countless times, trying to make good choices for our kids and also know what's allowable, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's,
realistic? I don't know, because I think you should be a little unrealistic in your goals for your kids.
Yeah, I think that this is maybe just a outline on how it can go down and just some tips and tricks of the trade that are going to benefit you, your child, and the educator.
Yeah, and I think from my perspective, I'm going to tell, like, I don't actually have your kids in school, so I can tell you what your teachers might want you to know when you show up for a meeting that they can't actually say because they want to keep their jobs.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't have a boss. Screw you guys.
Say whatever I want.
All right. So two things coming up that we need you to know about. One, book club for this season.
Yep. 13 things mentally strong parents don't do.
We're hoping you're grabbing copies of those, multiple copies of those.
And sharing them with people and making sure you all tune in to the episode at the end of the season.
Yeah. So we are hoping that you're reading them, and we will start gathering questions and comments for an upcoming episode that airs in July. So you still have a while to read the book, but we would love for you to read along as we're tackling that book. And then as always, we love your rating and reviewing on iTunes. We love to share them on the podcast. Today's review is from LMJVP. Jess and Mary are relatable on so many levels. They're engaging, entertaining, and intelligent. Oh, thank you. Not terrible is like sitting down with a couple of your dearest friends and just digging into whatever is on their minds. We would love to hear your review and 5 stars.
And when you leave a review, you can always be specific and share with us what your favorite episode was and what you would want to hear more about. We would be grateful for that. As always, we can't wait to hear what you think about advocating for kids in school.
Welcome to Not Terrible with your hosts, Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Jess is a part-time vegan yogi. You can find her on her motorcycle, usually heading to therapy. Mary is a writer and Jesus follower. She loves camping almost as much as cheeseburgers. The Not Terrible podcast is two childhood friends who have been through the ringer, learned some tough lessons, and kept going. Jess and Mary share stories, advice, and lessons on each episode. They try to find humor in the chaos and learn from their mistakes in an attempt to feel less alone as they navigate life's journey.
I feel like we kind of stumbled upon this topic because often I talk to you about things going on with Addie and her educators and her team of people. And I'll say, is this normal or is this legit? And you share like from a teacher's perspective and also the legality involved in advocating for your child at school and what that looks like. So when we talked about sharing what we know with our listeners, we felt like we could give a well-rounded discussion as a parent who advocates for her child on a very regular basis. And you, as a former educator and also a parent and knowing, you know, what that looks like.
Yeah, like what can typically go on a classroom, mm-hmm. what the law says we're allowed to do. Mm-hmm. And then, like, not just the head, but, like, the heart of a parent.
Right, right. And there's so many... It's so funny. When I talk to my dad about the meetings that we have and how often I'm in contact with Addie's educational team, he's just like, I can't believe that. Like, you know, they used to beg parents to go on field trips when I was a kid, and now they have waiting lists and lotteries, and just how, he goes, it just blows my mind, even from when we were children, how involved parents are in their kids' education. Mm-hmm. And public education, private education, whatever you want to say, that it's just parents, they're more present.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
and I think there's like levels of that. So for you,
right.
You would like to be a little more hands-off if you could,
mm-hmm.
but you, like, for Addie, mm-hmm. you can't.
Right.
And then the opposite of that is a helicopter parent who needs to be more hands-off and can be mm-hmm. more hands-off, but chooses not to be.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of, like,
yeah,
hits on that scale,
right.
of what your dad's referring to is, like, we're more engaged. Some of us, mm-hmm. like, you're more engaged because you have to be.
I have to be. This is a very specific, it's very specific, and it's also a very rare case.
Yeah.
And so I do the extreme because my son Max, who is, very average in terms of self-motivation and things, like, he's just a teenage boy. Yeah, he's just a teenage boy,
mm-hmm.
and he... only if there is a real concern or an issue will an educator contact us or we will contact them. Mm-hmm. And that's, and I really think the last time that happened was the sixth grade.
Yeah.
Yeah. But otherwise he is an AB student and he hasn't been in any trouble.
Right. He knows what to do to, mm-hmm. to get by and also not cause any red flags.
Right. Outside mm-hmm. of yelling bros before hoes in the lunchroom in elementary school, that was that's the most trouble he's ever been in.
Remember that.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Also that you're smiling now. At the time, you were really, really not smiling.
I was not smiling, no. No, but so I do. I always tell people I have a very unique point of view in having Max, who is gifted in some subjects very much above average. And then having Addie, who has a very specific learning plan and has many
obstacles
mm-hmm. and also there's two different ways to there's an amendment. Does this sound right? And now I'm jumping into IEP talk. So
okay. Accommodation is more like I need 35 extra minutes to do this activity, or I can't test in this regular classroom because there's mm-hmm. too many distractions. I need to be in a small group, things like that.
Right. So an accommodation, you're still doing the content that the average student does. You just need different, like you said, different criteria or time or... environment.
Yeah. So if you imagine like trying to look over a fence,
mm-hmm.
And there's all the average kids can see over the fence just fine.
Mm-hmm.
The accommodations would be bringing a ladder to the other kids so they can have the same view and have the same opportunity to learn the same things.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'd started with accommodations for Addie and then we moved on to modifications, mm-hmm. which is exactly what it is. Like you said, like it's
take out some things.
Take out some things like yes or no questions as opposed to
open-ended.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, remove having two multiple choices as opposed to four, just things like that. Mm-hmm. That because too much of anything is overwhelming, especially in terms of learning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we've moved on to that. What else were we talking about?
I think that's important too to say like. If there's ever a struggle in school, and it can be behavior or, like, comprehension, there's lots of different levels that an IEP can address, but they always start out, you all start out the same. Like, we
yeah,
all make the same
mm-hmm.
kind of
mm-hmm.
baseline changes, and then you see if it helps or hinders a student, and then it gets more intense or it gets more...
involved.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and I think that there's a lot of people that come into a situation. There's some people who are born knowing, or in preschool, or whatever help that they had with their medical professionals.
Uh-huh,
they
like come first in, steps
yeah,
and
first
stuff.
Steps and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Yeah, common like that. Addie was an average student. She was in an average classroom or general ed population, whatever you want to say. And due to her intense seizure activity in the last 6 years, her seizures have caused brain damage. It's like a head trauma every time she has a seizure. So she has digressed.
Mm-hmm.
And we have slowly had to make, like you said, accommodations and then modifications. And now, just recently, since she's going to be 14 this year, and in the state of Indiana, when you're 14, when you do have an IEP, you have to make the decision. If this is in your IEP, you have to make the decision, is my child still capable of earning a diploma?
Mm-hmm.
And we realized that Addie is not, because her condition, you know, without some change in science or a miracle, Addie's condition is going to worsen, and she's going to continue to digress. So we decided to take her off the diploma-bound track. So now Addie will earn a certificate, and along with the kids in her classroom, they start educating them and working with them on what they're going to do after high school. And maybe they stay until they're 22, which is an option here in Indiana, or they start to go into career placement with organizations that have worked with our high school and our special education team
mm-hmm.
To prepare these kids for when they leave school.
So like life skills.
Yeah, it's
training.
Right. So mm-hmm. Addie is in junior high right now, and she is in a classroom with like 10 other kids, and they're heavy on the life skills. Like Addie's never been able to do a ponytail. Well, I take that back. About the time she learned how to do a ponytail is when she lost the ability to mm-hmm. do a ponytail. So they work on that. They have little Barbie heads, and they're trying to teach her how to do it on the Barbie and then be able to do it on herself. They have a full washer and dryer and kitchen area and a living room and just all of these things that the kids learn and do. So, yeah, it's...
Do they take lots of field trips?
Lots of field trips. They do a lot of field trips. They do, where are they going? They did the post office and the library and those types of things. Just like, in the weeks leading up, they learned how to address an envelope and stamps and all of those things, which, Addie loves a handful of things. A lot, and mail is one of them. Sending mail, writing mail, getting the mail, putting the flag up on the mailbox, going to the post office, literally like mm-hmm. top five favorite things is just the mail process.
Yeah.
So that was a big one for her. She was pretty excited about it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, due to seizure activity, she missed that field trip. So that kind of stunk. There's lots of great exhibits at the Children's Museum that they go and visit.
Mm-hmm.
They did the basket. They did the you and your kids did this. The sports. They did a sports thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was they did all of that. And so the kids did the field trip, and then they also had projects that they had to present with the general ed population. And Addie's was basketball history in Indiana. Also, top five favorite things, basketball.
She loves basketball.
So, it was, I mean, I don't know, like, we are just really, really fortunate that a lot of these things, and it's only going to get more life skills centric with the field trips as they get older, you know, things mm-hmm. that they're actually going to be able to use and, you know, and understand.
So, at the school I used to teach at, we had a similar program to what Addie's a part of, and they went on a field trip at least every week. They learned how to go to the store and mm-hmm. pay and get change.
Yes.
Or go, you know, with a short list, understand, like, how to interact with people. I think they would go to the laundromat
Oh, yeah.
Even though they had a washer and dryer in the classroom, but they would teach you just so like things that if you are living in a home, you need to be able to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you said, a lawn, like maybe they're not all going to have a washer and dryer in their apartment and they have to go and get change and do the things.
Oh, and they learned how to ride the bus.
Oh, wow.
They learned how to take public transportation.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know I don't know why I'm kind of. I think they just went to like the mall.
Yeah.
They learned how to go like. Oh, restaurant. How to order.
How to order. That's a big
at,
thing.
At like a fast food, like walking up and telling someone what you want to eat.
Yeah.
That's
a big thing. Even in our last meeting, them telling us things that we have to let Addie practice doing, because there's just. There's times where she feels really confident and she'll go, I'm going to order for myself. And we're like, okay. And then there's other times where she's like, will you please do it? Will you just please do it?
And sometimes I wonder, like, so I have an 8-year-old and 10-year-old who also hate ordering when someone asks what they want to eat. So, like, it's always just hard to know, like, well, what's just a teenage girl thing and what's something we need to force, not force, but, like, very much encourage her to do on her own, you
right,
know, like,
yeah. And thank goodness for, because Addie was in the general ed population until this year. And we realized how much that didn't benefit her and discouraged her. And she started to hate school. I don't want to go to school. And that's when we realized, okay, her being in an algebra class for seventh grade is just, that's ridiculous. That's not her. There were a handful of classes that were like, wow, this is really not necessary. And they do an awesome job. Like, they read the same novels as the rest of the seventh graders. There still is a very specific criteria that they have to meet for this certificate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they do, recently it's I read. Is it still I step? So it's I step and I read?
No, I step is gone. I think it's I read.
I read. So there's not another one, but these are the standardized testing that they do. And it used to be, I think it was previously called I star for kids in Addie's class. And now they just, it's new this year and it's called I am. And that's the test that, so they take standardized testing. They do the same thing. And I mean, and her teachers are up against the wall, just like all the other teachers.
Yeah, there has to be growth. There has to be, like, milestones.
Yeah,
it has to be improvement.
Yeah, and it's she just took that. And luckily, that doesn't stress her out. That's seeing things that are uniform and having to take it. She loves it. Yeah. She's about that. So I guess the question is, I know that there are plenty of parents in our situation. But what if you are in a situation where you're questioning the teaching practices, or if your child is in the right environment to learn best, what would be the first step? I guess being involved, asking your child, knowing that, I think that was a big thing for us, just seeing how unhappy Addie was, because she's not an unhappy kid. But usually I assume that the teacher will reach out to you and the conversations during conference time and that type of stuff. But what would be a first step is, I guess, to reach out to the teacher.
Yeah, I think, so if you're a parent and wondering this, there might be a teacher also watching for some things. And I don't know how young they begin to do like accommodations and IEPs. I know like in kindergarten, you're not, chances are going to have an IEP. Like, because the more we learn about how kids develop, like they're just, you know what? All kindergartners are spazzes. Like, and there's what could look like a learning disability or a learning problem on a kindergartner could just be a squirrely little kid.
Yeah.
So, I think if they're that young, it's probably already been addressed by their family doctor in some way.
Okay.
But normally I think it's like third or fourth grade is when they'll start actually talking about labels and testing. And I think a lot of educators worry about the label, especially when you give a kid a label at a really young age. It tells him or her how he should behave or how he learns, as opposed to to being able to grow at all.
Right.
So some schools label faster and some slow that down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can, if you are worried about your kid, normally it will come up in behavior issues before it comes up in grades.
Sure.
And just talking to a teacher and saying, here's what I am struggling with, or here's what I think is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me how he or she acts in the classroom?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times how a kid acts at home is not how they act in the classroom anyway,
right.
Good or bad.
Right.
Like, that goes both ways. One of the things that I noticed about parents, if they, you know, it's scary saying out loud, do you think something might be a struggle for my kid?
Mm-hmm.
Being self-aware enough to ask that scary question, you need to be in some ways kind of ready for the answer.
Right. You don't yet. Yeah, you can't go in there with expectations and be on the defense.
Defensive. So it is, like, I understand,
mm-hmm.
That it would be horrible, not horrible. It is very, feels very unsafe to ask that kind of question.
Right.
But you also have to know that if you're asking, don't just be asking for someone to
tell you that your child is an angel and they're like the smartest kid in the class.
Yeah, yeah. Like, there might be some hard conversations that come of that.
Mm-hmm.
So
pat yourself on the back for being aware enough and being and asking the question if you have a concern, but also be prepared for the answer.
Yeah. And then it becomes like teachers get involved. Normally the guidance counselor, especially at the middle school level, mm-hmm. guidance counselor will get involved. Depending on what the concern is, your family doctor might be getting involved at that point too.
Mm-hmm.
Just lots of layers.
There are lots of layers. It can be a full-time job to not have an average student. Or
what's a better way to say that?
I don't know. I really don't know. Because, I mean, like you said, it's all relative at this point.
Right.
So, and I don't even know what average is considered. I mean, it's such a
It feels
word.
It feels like a crappy way to say it, because I think in terms of like when someone says like the average body, I'm like, shut up. Who are
average,
you to say is average?
So
like,
who says the average brain? So I don't know. I mean, I guess as much as I am against, or as much as I think that the system can kind of switch, like just the standardized testing, and that's basically how they decide those types of things, right? Yeah, I know. I don't know.
That's not the first red flag.
Right. No, I mean, like, standardized testing, that is based on average what the majority.
So
we say the majority.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, instead of average, because there's a majority of students that.
Right, but the bell curve is always, there will be.
Right.
Like, there's always going to be failures, and there's always going to be, like, above mm-hmm. average. So.
Right.
I don't know how you say that to make it not feel crappy.
I know. So it's just like age appropriate, because that's how, I mean, at seventh grade, at the 13-year-old level, these are the things that our educational system believed that your child should be able to master and know and take those skills onto the eighth grade and so on and so forth. So
mm-hmm.
it's, I guess like age appropriate education. I have no idea how to say it. We've never...
Yeah.
It's, I don't know, because that's all they've ever said, and having to, just for a seventh grader, there are just very specific things that they're supposed to know, and that's what they have to know, and that's what they're tested on, and that's how they decide if they're ready for eighth grade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's another thing too, in how far this has come in terms of how often they hold kids back nowadays, or I mean, how much they don't, almost, because research has shown that holding a child back is so much more detrimental than actually going on and sending them and, like you said, making accommodations or knowing their learning style and letting them continue, like the social repercussions and what it does to their self-esteem that can wreck a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, educators learn that holding a child back, especially the older they get, it doesn't improve their chance of succeeding.
Right.
Yeah, not at all. Mm-hmm. So, and I have so many thoughts that won't fit into this hour, but, so in middle school, and I struggled with this because I would have kids come in to my classroom and spend a year with me and just fail the whole time. Yeah. Wouldn't do work, wouldn't read, wouldn't do homework, wouldn't try. And then they just go on to eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And we kind of just, we set up accommodations. We put them in lower reading levels. Like, we make sure they're reading books at the right level that they like, but in middle school, we didn't hold kids back. We let them go to high school and not earn credits, and they kind of work themselves out. Is that right? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure what the answer to it is either, because when you hold a kid back, it knocks whatever wind mm-hmm. that they had out from under their sails. Like, and I think, and whether it's right or wrong, the whole third grade, you have to know how to read by third grade or you get held back. Like, mm-hmm. we know that if kids can't read by a certain point, they will never be successful until they get caught up in the reading. Like,
right.
you can't miss that skill and be successful later on.
Mm-hmm. Addie had just been diagnosed, and she was less than a year into seizure activity when she had to take the iRead. Oh. And we anticipated that she wouldn't pass. But she was still, like, she wasn't as far behind as she is now. I shouldn't say that. The gap hadn't widened as much as it had now then. And so she did the iRead summer school thing and passed. And we were done.
Got it.
It was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. And there were a handful of other kids in her class that did it.
Yeah.
That didn't have seizures. And so, but then now she has regressed, like
past that
third grade where she could read at a third grade or at that level, and now we're down to first grade. And so I don't know. It's just your situation is all just so different. I just wonder right now if she took that iRead, what would happen? I don't know. That's the thing too, is that there came a time in the last few years that they would send the standardized testing stuff home, and we never opened it. We didn't look at the I-STEP score. We requested that they no longer send a paper report card home because our school system struggled. What do we do? This is such a specific case of somebody we're watching her fall behind. No fault of her own or her parents
and nothing.
Or the educational team. Like, we are literally doing everything we can, and we don't. So how do we grade her? How do we grade a little girl who had something almost mastered one day, has 10 seizures overnight, and has no memory of what she learned yesterday? Like, how do we do this?
Yeah.
So they were
nothing is fair.
No, nothing is fair. And there's nothing that we can do. And like I said, I mean, there is things that we can do, but we're pioneering the things that we can do for the next kid. So that's what we decided. Like, hey, we're all going to learn this together, and we're not going to hold anybody, we're not going to point fingers or blame anybody. Like, we're going to come up with a system for the next Addie Hooker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're doing. We're not just doing this so that Addie can succeed. We're doing this so that the next set of parents, the next family that is struggling with this, knows, like, this is the plan in place when your child has a similar condition. And that's just how we had to look at it. And I think it's easier to do that and think of the kids to come as opposed to going, like, okay, what's best for our kid, our Addie, very specific to her. And this, I mean, she's one kid in a school of however many, 500-600. Like, you can't, we had to stop thinking that way because she's so specific. But I know for a fact she's not the last kid. She's not the first kid either, but we've just all come such a long way. She definitely won't be the last kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it gives you a little bit more of a stake in the educational system and in your community. when you have a severe case like this and thinking that way. I said that Addie's one of X amount of students, but I had an educator tell me once we had sat in a meeting a little too long. And she came in and she said, "We got to go. Your kid's only one of 900. Like, you know, that, like, discounting. But as angry as I was that she said that, I did take it in consideration and kind of looked at it in a different perspective, in that when we go in there and educate a class about how you care for someone while they're having a seizure, I looked at it that way. Like, each one of these kids is going to have a different experience or see this or say, my dad has epilepsy or whatever it is. So I just think that the community of it, like, not just working with the educational team, but working with the student body and empowering them on, you know, our school just did an abilities week, and they were specific to each day and the kids in Addie's class and highlighted them and said, this is how you talk to them, and this is their interests, and these are the things that they love. So if you see them in the hall, or, hey, if Addie ignores you, she's not actually ignoring you. It just takes her a while to process what you said. Mm-hmm. So just give her a little bit of time, because she's thinking about what she's going to say. She's not being rude.
Yeah.
And one of the little girls said, she is a peer of Addie's. And she goes in and she sits and plays Uno and talks to Addie. And they're just some really outstanding kids that come in and help in Addie's class. And also don't make the kids feel isolated. And they sit with them at lunch, or they'll walk with them down the hall or whatever. And she said, this week made me realize that it's not us and them. They are us. We're all the same. And, like, we have an amazing junior high. They do so much to make the kids better people.
Mm-hmm.
And that...
like, better humans.
Better humans, yeah. Yes, they do. And that... I know, even, like, just as recent as we were in school, I remember where the classroom was, where those kids were, and I didn't see them out in the hall very often. I mean, maybe in the lunchroom occasionally, some of them. But it wasn't inclusive.
No.
Not at all.
And it was almost... And probably not intentional, but almost hidden. Yes. A little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like that room had, like, a little bit longer of a hall, because so you couldn't see directly in the classroom. And it's come such a long way. And I think that people that have typical children, or kids that are just in the general ed population, mm-hmm. in the majority, I don't think that you realize how far I know they don't even use the term special education anymore, but the special education program, and how far that's come and what they're willing to do to help these kids feel valued and not excluded.
And not like a burden. Go back even 50 years in our history, the kids that we're including in our schools and saying matter would have been locked away.
Oh, absolutely.
And they would have been sent away from their families. And then mm-hmm. 25 years ago, mm-hmm. it was... you were in a classroom by yourself, and we didn't understand the social implications that had, mm-hmm. like, because their hearts, like, they still have value and importance, mm-hmm. and they still feel things, and they are aware of how people treat them, whether we say it out loud or not. Like, they're not blind to yeah. how people see them.
Mm-hmm.
So the social implications that had in our school, and mm-hmm. we're just now, I think, just beginning to understand that they are just as important, that they have value and importance in the lives of all the kids at the school, not mm-hmm. not just the ones that are similar to them,
mm-hmm.
and that we can all learn from them. Like, that's new. Like, that's not how educators were taught to. Like, inclusion is,
mm-hmm.
it's still changing and evolving, and we're not there yet, but it's It's a lot better than it used to be.
It is.
Not to say that this is still fine how it is. There are still lots of issues.
There are still lots of issues. And I think that I've always had a real concern for Addie and the bullying aspect. I honestly don't know if she ever has been bullied or if kids have ever said anything, because from the moment she started having seizures in school, I went into the classrooms and I educated the kids. And I've said this before, I looked all those little turds right in the eye and like, mm-hmm. look at me, because I'll come back for you. Yeah. if you give her a hard time, if you're making fun of her. But also, there was a way that I made the kids, like, how many of you have allergies? Well, if I looked at you, would I be able to tell that you had an allergy? No. Okay, will you look at Addie? Would you be able to tell she had epilepsy? No. Like, we're born with things, and things happen, and you develop different things. But we see each other, and you just try to make it like we all share something.
Yeah.
And then just empowering them on how they could care for and help in a situation. Like, Addie's not the only person you're ever going to see have a seizure in your life. If you're at the ballpark, if you're at the grocery store, wherever you are, now you have the knowledge to be helpful, to be a resource in that situation. And I think that helped curb bullying, because we went in there, we told kids exactly what was going on. We didn't give them the space to write their own story and decide what was wrong with Addie.
Mm-hmm. And when kids are scared of something, that's when they react like so strongly. So they're not going to say, I'm scared of you. I'm going to be mean to you because I don't understand you.
Right.
If you give them information, not that that cures all bullies from everything, but but giving kids instead of information, instead of letting them write their own story that then is scary and makes them feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. And they share their version of the story with other kids. And it's not necessarily true. So we took that power away, and just being we are present in the school a lot. Like, we're there picking Addie up or dropping her off late because of seizure activity or doctor's appointments or whatever it is. And so the kids see us, like we are a unit within our community, and they know Addie and her family.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, kids are very, as far as I've ever seen, kids are very, very respectful. So when I see the conversations and the news stories and all those things about bullying, how do you advocate for your child in that situation?
I mean, you go to the school immediately. Mm-hmm. You call the teacher, but you also probably call the principal too, because the teacher has limited power when it comes to bullies.
Uh-huh.
So consequences or modifications in schedule or any of those things, those are, for the most part, not a teacher. So elementary school, you can separate kids and have mm-hmm. them on different
There's
sides
degrees,
of the room.
Yeah. yeah. There's degrees of it, especially as kids get older.
Yeah. So like elementary is maybe first level as a teacher, but if there's a kid being bullied and it's at middle school and it's not in one, if it's one specific class, obviously you're emailing or calling that teacher. But if mm-hmm. it's just like in the hallways, and you need to let everybody know. Like, everybody needs to be involved in that.
Yeah.
Schools, this is legit zero tolerance.
It is.
Like, you cannot play around with that. Mm-hmm. Legally, you can't play around with that.
Mm-hmm.
And kids make rash decisions when they're bullied. It's so serious.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody doesn't take you serious, then you need to keep talking and you need to get louder and you need to go to the next level. This mm-hmm. isn't just like I asked for help and no one helped me. No, you don't stop asking.
Stop it. So would law enforcement be the next if school doesn't?
A lot of
schools have police officers, like, I don't know if it's on staff or, you know what I mean? But they're a part of.
Yeah. So a lot of the school districts have
the
police.
Community. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure if you would call the, I don't know, maybe. I mean, if my kid's being bullied and no one's listening to me, I show up to school.
Right.
And I don't.
Make my presence.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you aren't listening to me, I'll go to the administration building.
Right.
You can't ignore it. You can't say it's not important. Like, somebody needs to be investigating, checking mm-hmm. some cameras, talking to kids mm-hmm. immediately when somebody says they're being bullied.
I know now, on all, like, from elementary school through high school, when you call the school's main line, You know how you can hit numbers 1 through 6 for different things, attendance line, the nurse, the cafeteria. But there is also to report a bullying incident, press 4. And that's, and so it does, I mean, you can be anonymous, you can be the student, you can be the parent, you can be anybody in the situation, and you can share, like, we have an issue and this is what we're doing. I know even, like, within the kids, what is that called? I can't think of the name, but, like, basically, like, the platform that they use for their grades. And communication and all that.
Yeah.
Like, there's a safe way that they can communicate anonymously if they want, or, you know, to share their concerns about what's going on in the school. And, you know, if there's threats made or they think that someone else is going to be hurt or that the school is in trouble, then they can share those things. So I think that the school systems, at least our school system, is they're doing the best they can.
Paying attention.
Yeah, paying attention.
And I think that kind of comes, not that there's one answer that makes it all safe or, like, that will solve all our problems, but I think back to our episode when we interviewed Jeff Griesemer about, like, parents paying attention and talking to your kids. And a lot of times, I think our kids are scared or someone won't like them or someone will get mad at them or they won't, in some way they'll lose some kind of relationship if they speak up. If we're talking to our kids, like, I have no problem taking that information to the school to say that, like, cause I'm not worried about you not being my friend anymore. Like, you know, like so like being in communication with your kids too, I mean, keeps everybody safe.
Yeah.
Not just your kid.
Absolutely. I know we got off track a little bit because this is an emotional topic for me, especially. And, you know, Mary was in the education system for 10 years. 10 plus years is what I meant to say. 13 years. And I'm sure that this brings up a lot of, I mean, there were students that you probably advocated for and worked with and did things. And, I mean, you've shared some stories with me of students that you've had and students that, I mean, some of them that you probably had relationships with and they're not with us anymore.
Yeah.
And just like it's an emotional thing. I mean, I think that everybody goes through something. I think that every student has a story and, you know, even with our Max, I remember he was pulled for small groups in kindergarten and first grade. You know, and we were just, at that time, we were like, oh my gosh, we got to get him a tutor and we got to do this and all these things.
The end of the world.
Yeah, and it was just it was a thing. But I think that all of our kids at different times need a little extra something, whether it's attention or accommodation or tutoring or love or time or, you know, relationship, whatever you want to say, that we can all think of ways that we have had to advocate for our child. And I think that the bigger message in all of this is the communication aspect. Communicating with your children first, communicating with the educators, communicating with the support staff when needed, and always being honest with yourself, honest with them, and not being the defensive parent. These people, the majority of educators chose this profession because they care and they want your child to succeed. I love that you spend more time with their child than they do 5 days a week, you know? And I know that in our guts, we know our children well. And I think that, it's not a matter of the teacher being right and you being wrong or vice versa. It really is finding a way to, help your child thrive exactly the way that they will, right?
And I think that's important. I guess I should have said this earlier. So I often had kids whose parents made unrealistic demands of a school also.
Okay, yeah.
So kind of it reminded me when you said that not nice person came in and said your meeting was going too long and you had they had 900 other kids to care for. one of the struggles as a classroom teacher that I often had was when a parent couldn't understand why I couldn't spend 30 minutes working with that kid on their reading skills. Mm-hmm. Well, I would love to. I love reading, and I want your kid to be able to read. But I have 30 kids in this room, and your kid isn't more important than any of the other kids.
Right.
So I have to make education choices based on what's good for every child in this room. Mm-hmm. And a parent comes in, wants all the best education choices for their one kid that they have in that classroom. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it feels like the teacher is fighting back when it's not fighting back. It's that, no, these are all my kids. You have one, I have 30. Right. So I'm going to do what's best for all of them, not to leave your kid behind at all. And we'll make sure your kid's cared for too. But a teacher often has a wider view than a parent has.
Right.
And not that every time a teacher says something, it's for the best interest of the kids. Like, that's just, in general, when you come into a communication, a meeting or something with a teacher, know that they have to juggle all the kids and not just yours.
Yeah. And I always, because I had to learn the hard way a couple of times and like what I was requesting, and there's a thick stapled thing of paper that I get every one of these meetings, and it's called parental rights. And it's like, by law, what I, and mostly not I, but my child is guaranteed, obligated and guaranteed. Yeah. Like this is what we have to provide for your child as a public school. And I tell people all the time, one of these days I'm going to build a tree house with as many copies of this as I have. So I had to learn the hard way in some of the things that I requested, and I didn't know, but I realized I can't ask the teacher to do something one-on-one with my child that I'm not willing to do at home. If I think that Max or Addie needs X amount of time, like, okay, can you sit down and listen to them read and do this, and we'll assess it. And I was realizing, like, no, these are actually things that I can be doing at home. If I let my kid get off the bus, eat some junk food, drink some pop, and stare at the television until at 8:30 bedtime, what am I doing?
Right.
Like, there is some ownership in your child's education just because you're not their teacher. There has to be.
Yeah. And
hitting on a sensitive subject.
Part
right
two begins now of just like, yeah, you can't be the parent that comes in demanding all the bells and whistles for your kid, but the minute the school bell rings, you don't do jack for your kid.
Right.
So we only have so many minutes in the day. We only have so many resources. If you are expecting magic during the school day, but no magic is happening at home, and this isn't like, well, I have a teaching degree, so I know what to do. No, it's just sitting down and reading with your kid. If you can't check your kid's homework,
right?
I can't spend 15 extra minutes tutoring him when everyone else is at lunch. Like, there's a give and take. And we have, at some point, kind of where you started this whole thing about your dad, the way that parents are involved now, we've also shifted somehow to the thing that only teachers can educate kids and nobody else can. Yeah. And that's scary, because that's not how kids learn either.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I also touch on this, that I think being honest and forthright and upfront with your child's teacher, I remember, and I don't know why I didn't take this into consideration, but when John and I got divorced, I didn't say anything to Max's teacher, and it was a couple of months in, and two teachers contacted me, and they were like, hey, like, this is not like Max, something's going on, what's up? And I was like, oh my gosh. I said, I'm really, really sorry, but this is what's going on. And they're like, wow, that makes a lot of sense. We'll give him some grace, we'll give him some extra hugs, like things like that. Just, hey, we didn't know. But even my son, who, you know, no learning issues at all, they saw a shift because there was something going on at home and they saw a shift in his behavior at school. So even if it seems minor to you, I mean, it wasn't minor to me at all, but that was my first kid in school and I did not think I needed to tell the teacher, but I realized, oh wow, now I realize these are things I need to share. And, you know, teachers aren't going to share your business. They really just want to be able to know what your kid needs at that moment, you know?
Yeah. And to do our job the best way possible, we need to know what happens out. Like, we don't need to know all the details.
No.
But if there's, or you can just say, hey, we're going through a tough transition at home and he might be a little extra tired or he might need a little extra patience this week. And that's, not comprehension, like learning disability wise, but a lot of times the longer you're a teacher, you understand that a lot of the behavior issues have nothing to do with school.
Oh yeah.
So a lot of the kids, especially small kids that don't have the language to tell you they're hurting, they're going to misbehave to let you know that they're hurting.
Right.
And, an IEP isn't going to handle that. That's a different type of attention that a kid needs. Mm-hmm. And if at home, for any reason, you're going through a transition or a rough time or somebody has passed away, like any kind of big feeling or
parent
big emotion.
Loses a job, like income changes and they feel the stress of that. Like there's just 1,000 things that affect our kids.
A new baby arrives.
Right.
Parent, mommy and daddy aren't getting along. Somebody separates. Like your kids are bringing that to school and they're bringing their behaviors because they don't have the words for it.
That brings me to our book club selection for this season, 13 Things Mentally Strong Parents Don't Do. And I, you know what, I'm going to be honest, still working through it. We're going to touch base on this in about a month, but I'm just going to throw in one of my things that I would choose that mentally strong parents don't do, and that is projecting or making your child the victim. And I've seen that often in those situations. I haven't seen it. Actually, I've heard parents doing it. Like, they're like, oh, I went to school and I said this. And I did, and I was just like, what are you doing? Like, you are projecting that this teacher is incompetent when in all actuality, you feel guilty about not showing up for your kid at home. And I'm sure that happens so often because it's easier to blame somebody that's not in your house than to take responsibility for your own actions. And also the victim mentality, going in, yelling at teachers or administrators in front of your child.
No,
absolutely
don't
not okay. Absolutely not okay. Because then your child sees that you've disrespected somebody of authority and somebody to be respected. And then they take that back to the classroom and to school.
Yeah, you ruin the rest of the school year.
Yeah. So just, be very aware of your actions. Your children do not need to be involved. Not at an elementary or even middle school level. And even in terms of high school, there's certain things like they can take responsibility for their actions. But I think there are usually two different conversations or conferences that need to happen.
Yeah.
One with you and the educator. And then you can bring your child in and let them know the expectations and what you guys are going to do to move forward so that they succeed. So just have a plan of action and don't knee jerk. Don't send an email when you're angry or when you've heard one side of the story.
And don't believe everything your kid says. Oh my gosh. Please don't.
Yeah. So it's just, there's nobody out to, I mean, maybe there is sometimes I know there's exceptions to the rules. We've had some crummy educators ourselves, but I'm just saying that there's a way to work through it and be professional. This is a professional relationship.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because I think a lot of the things where advocating for kids in school, you don't have to have an addy to be an advocate for your child. And we all do this in some respect at some level, whether it's when they first go to school and they're trying to figure things out or it's their senior year and they're trying to figure out how to survive that senior mess. So we are discussing the book club July 8th. If you haven't gotten a copy of this yet, I would highly recommend 13 Things Mentally Strong Parents Don't Do. We'll throw this up on our Instagram so you can see what it looks like, or you can check out the show notes to get a link to a copy. We would love for you to read this. There are so many things we're going to talk about. if you're a parent or even a grandparent, to grab a copy of this book.
Yeah, it says on the cover, raising self-assured children and training their brains for a life of happiness, meaning, and success. So basically, if you are a parent or a grandparent or an educator, or you know a child or you've seen one before, you should probably read this book.
If you've ever seen a kid.
You know what they look like. All right, Mary, it's that special time where we do our not terribles. What you got?
My not terrible is, so we're recording these obviously a little early for summer. And the sun is shining and it's almost 80 degrees. Like it is.
There's not frost on the inside of our windows at our office.
For the first time since October. Mm-hmm. It is like, it's officially spring. We just finished up Easter. Like it's a whole lot of, I don't know, after that summer or that winter slump I always get into, this I'm feeling alive.
That's good.
What about you? What's not terrible?
So, bought some cabinets last week.
Oh, we didn't talk about this.
I know. I bought the cabinets, and they're in the boxes. They're sitting in the kitchen, one step at a time. And I taped out how I want to do it. So I've got the masking tape on the floor, so I know exactly where the cabinets are going to go. So, and I'm an IKEA person. My kitchen is IKEA, and but I got so overwhelmed with what I wanted the inside of my cabinets to be that I was like, can I just buy the shelves? Because I'm not ready to put the doors on or put the cabinets on the inside. I don't know if I want shelves. I don't know if I want pullouts. I don't know if my silverware is going to go here. And he was like, yes, it's fine. But he was just so happy that, like, when I said, can I just get the shelves? Can I just get, and he was like, yeah.
Just the boxes?
Yeah, he thought, like, I walked up and I had a paper and a list and I had everything. And he was just like, oh, crap. Like, I could tell he was like, I don't feel like doing this right now. And before I walked up, he was in a fight with one of the other customers. She was like, she said something. And he goes, no, ma'am, I can't order that because it doesn't exist. And I was like, uh-oh, I'm going to give this guy an out. And I was like, I just want to. And he was like, yes, click, 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 click. Went and got it. Plus, I like that it was like a third of what I was planning on spending. But I know I'm still going to spend. And I'm just breaking it up. And I was like, all right. One step at a time, because this is how I do things. So, yeah. And I have a bunch of garage sale stuff in my garage, so I don't have the storage to store all the stuff until I get, like, it was your whole garage for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I'm doing it like that, too, for that reason. So, that's okay. That's the next step. I have to have it done because I'm hosting a first Thursday.
In June.
Yeah. Which is in a couple months. Like right now, I know this is in June.
Well,
but
yeah, you got like 6 weeks to get a kitchen ready.
Yeah, which
we don't
have,
need a kitchen.
But no, we don't need a kitchen. I have a.
But that's like in
I can
your head.
I might post this just for you guys, but I have a beautiful kitchen table, so nobody really has to go into my kitchen.
Yeah,
we could all sleep on it if we wanted to stay the night. So we'll I'm actually not worried about it. But I would like to just have it a little bit more functional.
Yeah.
Son of a. Also, Harley riders are out.
That's. Spring.
And I'm not gonna lie, I'm on the fence about whether or not I want to buy a boat or a motorcycle. I know.
Can you pull a boat with your car?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would get a boat.
I know, because then I can invite friends, but then I could get a motorcycle and not have to talk to anybody. decisions.
Not to throw the kitchen off. Do you know that there's this business called Semi Homemade that makes different fronts for those cabinets?
Yes, I used to follow them on Instagram. And they're beautiful. I mean, they really
they
make
look
it look
like
custom made.
And they're just, you buy the boxes
so
and then you put those fronts on. And they, I didn't want to throw that
no,
into,
No, I
know.
Okay. But that's the thing, because the existing cabinets that there's not very many. I have a galley kitchen, a one-sided galley kitchen. Mm-hmm. So I have a tiny kitchen and I'm trying to build out a little bit. But yeah, I might have to look. Maybe I might just get some custom pulls. Yeah. I might keep the fronts and just get some custom pulls to change it up a little bit.
And I know we've talked about this before too, just because we talk about kitchens a lot because that was our winter.
That might also be our other podcast that we start.
Yeah,
kitchen talk.
Kitchen talk. IKEA has now come out with the cabinet fronts that are actual pure white as opposed to the off-white, which is what you have and what I have. You know, like they've just now finally come out with like legit white,
white,
not like the
no, because I have the glossy white, which was That was like, I have the, it's a super glossy one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine is, mine are white shaker style cabinets.
Yes. Yes.
But they are, it's not like a, if you had like a gallon of legit white paint, it's not white, white. It's just a slight off white.
I know, because I painted my walls pure white. So now my cabinets look dirty.
Yeah. And they're not dirty. They're just the off white. But IKEA just now came out with like real white.
Yeah.
We have a lot of kitchen things to talk about.
There is. All right. We'll see you guys next time.
See ya.
You've been listening to Not Terrible with Jess Hooker and Mary Graham. Connect with the podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Not Terrible Podcast. Visit them at notterriblepodcast.com for show notes and additional content. You can sign up for their newsletter to receive bonus episodes and podcast extras. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast provider. Not Terrible is recorded in conjunction with The Chick McGee Show and Off the Air Podcast. Recorded in the Front Room Studio, this has been a Waco production.